Hey, Bubs, welcome back to a brand new episode of Talkin' Snicked, the Wolverine Show. The best podcast there is at what it does, and what it does best is tell you about Wolverine. I'm your host, Ryan. Today's episode, we are continuing our exploration of Hunt for Wolverine. Over the last 2 weeks, we covered two of the four-issue minis that bridge the gap between Hunt for Wolverine and the Return of Wolverine. Today, we are covering the third of four of these four-issue miniseries. We are going to cover the noir-style Weapon Lost 1-4. As I said last week, I feel that Adamantium Agenda is objectively the best mini of these four miniseries. But my personal favorite, upon a reread a few weeks ago, it became Weapon Lost. Now, Weapon Lost and Adamantium Agenda were kind of tied for my number two on my last read-through, with Mystery and Madripoor being my favorite of the minis. But of course, on this read-through, I kind of realized that Mystery and Madripoor doesn't live up to how good it was as I remember it being. It really didn't hold up, other than the fact that Betsy got her original body back. The series really wasn't all that exciting, it wasn't really all that great, and that kind of bumped it down and let me really focus again on Adamantium Agenda and Weapon Lost. And Adamantium Agenda, I think, did have better writing. I mean, it's hard to top Tom Taylor when he brings his A-plus game. He just gets comics, he gets superheroes, and he always tells a great story. Now, I'm not always a big fan of his dialogue. The choices that he makes with particular characters, sometimes it befuddles me, but for the most part, the dialogue is always pretty crisp, and the storytelling itself is always fantastic. So Adamantium Agenda, just by itself, the writing alone, I think is the best of the four, and you really can't argue with R.B. Silva on pencils. You just can't. Guy is fantastic. But my personal taste, the kind of stories that I really like the most, even more so possibly than, you know, tights and flights superhero stories, are crime noir or just noir style stories overall. In my spare time, I do some writing. I kind of dabble in prose as well as just script writing, again, all in my spare time. But one of the stories that I've written for myself, just as a fan of that genre, as a fan of particular styles of characters, I've written crime noir myself. So noir is something that I've always loved. And this story is very much a superhero noir. During the Resurrection relaunch of all the X titles in, I want to say, early 2017, maybe it was early 2018, although I'm pretty sure it was 2017. One of my favorite writers on all of these various titles was Charles Soule on Astonishing X-Men. He just had a way of telling stories. He had an understanding of these characters that I really enjoyed. I found it to be reminiscent of later Claremont, not necessarily, you know, Dark Phoenix, Days of Future Past, sweeping operatic Claremont, but more of the nitty-gritty, you know, the launching of all the various spin-offs and things like that, where Claremont really kind of got to show off the different styles of stories that he could tell. And Astonishing X-Men that Charles Soule did reminded me a lot of that. It was a 12-issue series with like a different artist, I think, on every book. And it told one long story over 12 issues. And it was an internal story. It was an introspective story. It starred a handful of my favorite X-Men. And each issue just kind of branched off and told its own style of story. And if that wasn't enough, at the time Charles Soule was writing probably the only Star Wars comic that Marvel has done since Disney bought Star Wars that I've actually enjoyed, which was the Charles Soule and Giuseppe Camuncoli Darth Vader story that takes place between episodes 3 and 4. The Darth Vader run from Charles Soule, like, really just explored kind of how Vader, or I guess how Anakin, really came to embody the Darth Vader persona. It was a really, well done comic series. And like I said, it's the only Star Wars comic that Marvel has done that I've actually enjoyed. And to top it off, not only did he write this excellent Astonishing X-Men series that I loved and this Darth Vader series that I loved, he had also taken over Daredevil. And I would consider his run of Daredevil among the top. It's right up there with the Frank Millers and the Brian Bendises and the Mark Waids. He managed to take a character that had kind of been stagnating and breathe new life into him. And so when they announced that he was going to be doing this Hunt for Wolverine and one of the events, as well as doing the Return of Wolverine, I was ecstatic. I was very excited. And I think that Weapon Lost, it just holds up. I mean, Charles Soule's the guy that killed off Wolverine in Death of Wolverine. Now he's the guy that's bringing him back. He's the architect of this whole mini event inside the X line. And I think that his issue is so unique, or I guess his series is so unique compared to the other four. And like I said, it's that noir style. I really like it. So hopefully, as I go through it, you'll all see the merit in this series and you'll come to love it too. First off, the covers, the first two covers done by Greg Land, second two by Giuseppe Camuncoli. All four of these covers are excellent. They look like a crime noir movie poster. So, I mean, I really enjoy that. It's just a great aspect, and it's something that's really good. I mean, I've talked about the covers a little bit where Greg Land did like the first two of all the different series, and it seems like Giuseppe Camuncoli came in and did the second two in all of these series. But the Weapon Lost covers, even more so than Adamantium Agenda or Mystery of Madripoor or even Claws of a Killer, I just like these ones so much. So the story starts in Hell's Kitchen, and it starts with narration. Case file, Weapon Lost. And it's Daredevil's voice. He's kind of taken us through this case that he was given. He is playing the role of noir detective. You know, that private investigator that gets hired by that person who isn't probably 100% squeaky clean. And the private investigator knows it, but he's going to take the job anyway because he's the only one that can do it. That sort of thing. Or maybe he's down on his luck and he needs one last job to retire. Whatever the reason, whatever the motivation is, we definitely get that here from Daredevil. We get very cinematic views of him like swinging across the rooftops of the city, living up to his namesake as he narrates this whole thing. And eventually he arrives at the rooftop where he's heading. And he's heading to this rooftop specifically because he has reached out for help on this mission. This is a mission that was given to him by Kitty Pryde of the X-Men. She came to him and said, Wolverine's body is missing. We need to find it. I'm putting a team of X-Men together. We're going to go over here. And Iron Man's going to go over there and do his thing. And we would like you to use your detective skills, use your contacts in the underworld or the investigative world. And, you know, just see what you can find. See what you can dig up. And he knows that this is a job that's bigger than just one man. So, of course, he calls in help. And the help that he calls in is a character that I'm not very familiar with at all, which was a pleasant surprise for me. It's an Inhuman character, so that's probably why I despise the Inhumans. I felt neutral towards the Inhumans until Marvel decided that they're going to try to replace the X-Men with the Inhumans. And maybe that's just my cynical attitude, but as an X-Men diehard, it definitely seemed like that's what Marvel was trying to do. And I'm not going to go into the whole studio politics between Marvel/Disney and Fox and who owns the rights to what and this and that. All I know is that for a while in the comics, the X-Men were pretty much just crapped on by Marvel and they were replaced by the Inhumans. And I hate Inhumans. I hate them. I don't know if I'll ever forgive them. And it's not even their fault. But I just don't know if I could ever forgive the Inhumans for what Marvel tried to do with them. So this guy comes in, this Inhuman, who I'm not familiar with at all. Turns out he is a former New York City detective. A very decorated New York City detective. But since he became an Inhuman, I guess he was exposed to some Terrigen mists when one of those clouds was going through. Perhaps it was earlier, perhaps it was later. But either way, since he's become an Inhuman, he actually runs the like Inhuman police, Inhuman security thing on New Adelan. And he's a character named Frank McGee. And he comes riding in on this like really cool flying motorcycle, Hagrid style. He doesn't have a little baby with him though. And he just kind of lands and he's like, hey there, Daredevil, what can I do for you? And we get a little bit of narration where Daredevil just is like, hey, you know, I called him in because he's one of the best and he has this really unique gift that is what makes him an Inhuman. And so then we get some little shots here of Frank using his power. Basically, he has this ability where he can kind of take a snapshot of whatever it is that he's looking at, like a freeze frame, and just store that in his brain. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of like an eidetic memory, but it's not with reading. It's take a snapshot of anything and you can just recall it in your brain. So basically he can take all these crime scene photos and instantly recall all of the information that's in him as if he was looking at a photograph. I guess it's very similar to the Misty Vision that we saw in the Luke Cage and the Defenders Netflix series for Marvel, which makes sense because of what happens a little bit later. Ultimately, Daredevil fills Frank in on what's going on. He says, hey, here's the deal. There's a mutant. He's missing. We're not sure if he's alive or dead. We need to find him. And Frank's like, well, how come the mutants aren't looking for it? Like, what's the deal? Is this something we got to keep under wraps? Like, does this mutant murder a bunch of people? And like, the mutants are trying to keep it under wraps. And Daredevil doesn't really say anything. And so Frank's like, oh, I get it. Okay, it's Wolverine. I do like Frank's little, you know, wisecrack here where he's like, oh, which one? There's two. And so Daredevil says, no, it's Logan. It's the original one, the first one. We thought he was dead. His body's been stolen, and we don't know if he's alive or dead. And so Frank says, all right, well, I don't really have anything better to do. I'm getting kind of bored just being like this security guy up in New Adelan. Like, I'd really love to get back on the beat. So this is, I guess, the closest to it that I can get. So yeah, count me in. And he's like, but like, is it just the two of us? Because, you know, like if it's Wolverine, the original one, this is kind of a global deal. Like, the dude's been everywhere and the dude knows everybody. So if we're going to try to track him down, we're going to have to cover, well, the entire world. Daredevil's like, yep, I understand that it's a bigger job than just the two of us. And we're not done recruiting. I actually have at least one other person in mind. And you know what, Frank? You'll love her. You'll fit right in with her. He even throws out, you know, typical noir style dialogue where he's like, you'll love her, Frank. She's your kind of gal. Like, when does Daredevil ever say stuff like that? Never. But in a noir story, the Daredevil character would use phrases like that. So, I mean, if they really wanted to seal this as a real noir, he probably would have said, you know, she's your kind of dame, but I'm not going to get nitpicky here just because I like that Charles Soule is like really just going all in with the dialogue. He's like, yep, this is a noir story, so I'm going to noir it up. So the scene cuts then to a bar in Brooklyn, and we see the next character that Daredevil and Frank McGee are going to try to recruit to their little investigation. And it just so happens to be Misty Knight. She's at this bar in Brooklyn. She's reading a book. She's drinking. And then this eight ball comes like kind of flying down towards the bar at her. She picks up the eight ball, looks around, and realizes that the bar is being held up by robbers in ski masks with, you know, machine guns and things like that. And she just looks at them, grabs the eight ball, and just grinds the eight ball to dust with one hand. And the goons are like, oh, crap. Like, let's get the heck out of here. Misty just kind of brushes it off. She goes back to her book, and not too long after, a voice from off panel just says, good book. And Misty kind of looks up and she realizes that it's Daredevil. And she's like, oh, I see, it's Daredevil. She just puts her hand up to his mouth and she's like, let me stop you before you get started. I'm retired. And Daredevil's like, all right, fair enough. I guess that's it for now. How are you? And then someone else kind of comes over and taps Daredevil on the shoulder. And he's like, hey, Double D, like, let me have a chance. You know, let me talk to her cop to cop. And it's Frank McGee. He sits down next to Misty and kind of introduces himself. And he's like, hey, I'm Frank McGee. And she says, hey, you know, I worked on the Force too. Of course I know who you are. Yeah, I'm a big fan of your work. And he's like, hey, likewise, you know, you were an excellent cop as well. I always had a professional admiration for you. And so she just says, you know, like, well, what's the deal? Why are you working with Daredevil? How come you're not a cop anymore? You get injured? And he's like, no, I'm an Inhuman. And she's like, oh, cool. Yeah, I get it. You know, I have a cybernetic arm or whatever it is. You know, I'm also off the job because of a disability, but getting over the disability has made me more than I was. And yet here I am not working anymore. And they kind of share their little cop stories. Like, I was doing this. And then Misty says, well, I was doing that and this and that. I like it. It's just, you know, two old cops that are drawn to the line of work because of a curiosity and because of a drive to be the best, a drive towards justice. And it's cool to see these two, like, people who are retired, not necessarily by choice, just kind of bond over a drink and just talking about their old beats and realizing that, yeah, you know, they do in fact still have a lot to offer. And, you know, if they're going to get back in the game, then why not get back in the game on, like, the world's biggest investigation, the disappearance of Wolverine? Of course, we keep getting all of this various narration. Even though Daredevil leaves the bar, he hears everything that they say because, you know, Daredevil, heightened senses. I didn't really explain who Daredevil was. If you're listening to this podcast and you don't know Daredevil, shame on you. but seriously, Daredevil is a superhero in Marvel Comics. He was blinded as a boy, and as a result of that blinding, developed superhuman abilities of, you know, hearing and touch, and he developed this extra sense called a radar sense. And then he did all kinds of martial arts training, and then he became a lawyer. So he's a lawyer by day, and he's a costumed vigilante by night. He's very street level in that he doesn't have super strength or all of this wealth and all that. He basically just keeps his neighborhood safe. Anyway, so that's how Daredevil is able to hear everything that goes on between Misty and Frank. And he's like, you know, I couldn't have done it better myself. At this point, they trade in Frank's flying motorcycle for Misty's flying car, which is awesome. They go to recruit the fourth and final member of their little investigative team. So far, we have the superhero Private Eye. We have the two grizzled old cops who are out of the game, you know, and are coming back for one last hurrah, one last shot at getting justice. And so they need a fourth member to, well, round out the team, to even things out. And they arrive in New Jersey, I think it said, at some, like, decrepit old house that's been run down. It looks a little bit like perhaps like an old gang house, but Daredevil pretty much tells them, like, don't worry about it. It's not what it looks like. It's not that kind of place. You don't need your weapons. Be on your guard, but you're not really in any danger. Let's go inside and we'll talk to the guy who's here and we'll kind of feel it out from there. And they walk into this house and they do. It's, you know, it's just as beat up and run down on the inside as it is on the outside. There's trash everywhere. The house is unkempt. The windows are boarded up and everything. And there's just this guy with, you know, he's, like I said, he's unkempt. He's got long hair and he's got the long kind of scraggly facial hair. He almost looks like Rick Grimes. And he's just sitting there on this computer and he's got all these different screens up, not like, you know, he's not swordfish hacking over here or anything like that. He's just on the computer. He's on his smartphone. He's on his tablets. And we find out that this character is a guy named Doug Ramsey. So Doug Ramsey, for all of you X-Men fans, should ring a bell. He is the mutant known as Cypher. His mutant power is that he can understand and speak all languages. And it's not just spoken languages. It's really any language that can be described as a language in the abstract. Like, I think at one point he was even able to read, like, body language. It even went further where it's like, not just language, but he can find patterns in speech and patterns in language and patterns in pictures. And he can read the language that's subtextual language and all of that sort of stuff. And we kind of find out that the reason why he's all weird in this house by himself and unkempt and disheveled is because he has developed an addiction. He is an internet junkie. And I mean, that's relatable, right? Like, how many of us spend way too much time on the internet, whether it's social media, or I don't even know what else people do on the internet now nowadays, other than interact with each other. And by interact, I mean, you know, anonymously bash one another for all of the different viewpoints that we all share. No, but seriously, I mean, for a guy who can read languages, is there a better place to be than the internet? Because every language you can possibly have is going to be in the internet somewhere. So he is just getting his fix and everything. And I kind of like that. I like this angle. You know, is there anything more noir than like the junkie who needs to get straight, but by going straight can't actually help the team? You know, just awesome noir trope kind of coming to light right here. And I like that it's Cypher. You know, it keeps it in the mutant family. It's really their connection, because we have two humans and an inhuman. Like, none of them are mutants. So, of course, you bring on the mutant who's going to possibly give some insight, or at least tie it all together. Ultimately, they can't really seem to get a coherent answer from Doug when they try to speak with him. And eventually, Frank has to take drastic measures and, like, shoots the power line that cuts the power to every device in the house. Basically, he just flushes his entire stash right here, and Doug kind of freaks out. He grabs a couple of firearms that he has handy, like really high-tech stuff. Luckily, Daredevil and Misty and Frank are all experienced hats, and they're able to take countermeasures rather quickly and subdue Doug and bring him to his senses long enough for him to agree to help them find Logan. Of course, anytime you make a deal with an addict and you need that addict to do something, you have to, give them a taste of what it is they're looking for every now and then. So Doug will help them. He will help them find Logan, but he's going to need access to the internet. So Frank kind of gives up his phone. He's like, all right, here you go. Here's my phone. Do what you can do. And within like two panels, Doug already says, well, I found Logan. And they're like, oh, wow, that was easy. Like, where was he? And he just holds up the phone, and it's all these various, it's like a National Enquirer style website with all of this different stuff. And it just says Wolverine reported global sightings past 60 days. And it's just this massive list. You know, 41% of sightings were in the U.S., 33% were in the European Union, 26% of them were international, which you would think that the EU would also be considered international, but I guess not. There's even like tabloids of like Wolverine got me pregnant. And it's like a picture of a Wolverine looking dude. And he's like got his arms around this woman who's pregnant. And she's got like this little crown of flowers and stuff. I don't know. It's great. So that is the first issue. The team has been put together. Now the investigation can begin. As the first issue leaves off, Logan is everywhere. He's been sighted everywhere that a human being can possibly be sighted. And so they decide, okay, well, we're going to have to narrow it down. So we're going to start with, I guess, the most recent sightings and work our way back from those. Or after we've reviewed those, then we'll wait until new ones pop up and then we'll kind of go follow the trail there. Eventually, we're bound to stumble on the real trail. So the story opens with our team of four. Now they're in like an inhuman assault tank that flies and stuff. I don't really know what it's called, but needless to say, it's Frank's inhuman ship of some sort. Of course, the opening narration is straight up noir. When the leads dry up on a case, they call it cold. Everything's frozen solid. Like, all right, cool. Like, yes, I love that noir style hyperbole where everything is like the worst it could possibly be or the best it could possibly be. There's never anything in between. It's just, there's a terrible situation that could only get worse. Anyway, they narrow it down to a place outside of Chicago, I believe, and they head in that direction. Meanwhile, the scene changes and we are taken to Ranger Outpost 9 in Meadow Lake Provincial Park, in Saskatchewan, Canada. And it's a ranger outpost and it's all boarded up. You got all these different like park rangers inside this like boarded up cabin. They've all got like hunting rifles and they're peeking out in between these boards. And we get the idea that they've been attacked and something is out there. And whatever is out there, they think is going to come back. You see, there's like two guys looking through the boards with guns. There's another ranger on the radio. I guess it almost looks like a telegram. She's like, you know, doing the do 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 do. And you see a fourth guy is like laying up on a couch. He's all bandaged. He's not wearing his clothes and stuff. So you get the feeling that one of them at least is in really bad shape. They were probably all attacked and they all four banded together, retreated into this little cabin. And now they're pretty much out of luck here. So we're then taken to this first place where they have picked up the trail of Logan. It's actually not Chicago. That was my bad. They actually head back to Manhattan. So they're above Pennsylvania. They head back to Manhattan to a place called the McCarthy Medical Institute. Now, if you remember back, listeners, to the first episode of this series where we covered the Hunt for Wolverine one shot that opened up this event, and then we kind of covered those 12 little appearances that were the Where's Wolverine section of all those various comics. One of those comics was Jane Foster in the hospital, and a guy who looked like Wolverine, although it was very obviously Logan, arrived at the hospital and left flowers, but did not leave a card. And then he left. So it's kind of cool to see that they managed to actually track down a real Logan sighting, but unfortunately, because they're not actually police officers, they can't, the hospital can't give them any information about a patient. And I don't know how many times Frank and Misty remind the hospital they're not asking about a patient, they're asking about someone who showed up to visit a patient. But again, the hospital still isn't really able to give them any information. At one point, they even show the hospital staff, like, look at this video. Like, we just need to know who this guy is. And they're like, whoa, where'd you get that footage? Like, that's hospital CCTV footage. You guys shouldn't have that. They're like, oh, never mind about that. But, you know, they have Daredevil out in the car, and he's using his heightened senses to listen to this nurse while Frank and Misty are interrogating her. Well, they're just questioning her. But her heartbeat says that she's telling the truth. So unfortunately, there's nothing more that they could legally do. They can't force this lady to give them information. So they figure, all right, well, I mean, I guess it's a legit sighting, but it is what it is. We have to leave. They follow up the next lead, which takes them all the way out to Phoenix, Arizona, where a couple of bikers claimed that they got into a fight with Wolverine. But of course, as Frank and Misty and even Daredevil question this guy further, it turns out he was actually making it up. He actually didn't even get into a fight. He had one of his biker buddies use a knife and slash him across the stomach four times so that he would get like this cool scar. So he could be like, yeah, I beat up Wolverine, but you know, Wolverine did take a chunk out of me. And Frank's like, Frank kind of beats up the guy a little bit and humiliates him and gets the rest of his like biker gang to look up on their phones how many claws Wolverine has, and they all are like, yeah, he's got three claws. So he just makes that guy look like a complete idiot and a fool, and unfortunately they have to cross that lead off because it's not a real sighting. The next sighting that they follow up on this time takes them to Chicago. So I knew there was a Chicago in there. I jumped the gun a little bit. That's my bad. So my apologies, bubs. But we're taken now to Chicago, and it's another somewhat real lead. For those of us with the eagle eyes, we'll notice that this security guard that Misty is talking to has a logo on the patch on his shoulder that matches the same logo that we heard of in the Mystery of Madripoor series and the Adamantium Agenda. It's the logo of an organization known only as Solterra. So Those of us who had been following along with all of these series, when we see that patch, we're like, all right, this is a real sighting, because in the other two stories, this is the only thing that is like the only through line between those two. And so now here we have it in a third story. And basically the guy says, look, I was a security guard. Wolverine showed up. I posted it to my social medias. I had to take it down immediately. It wasn't really Wolverine, so that's why I took it down. But of course, Daredevil's doing the whole, you know, I'm hiding out of sight and I'm listening to your heartbeat with my senses. And they're able to tell that the guy, he's not being entirely truthful. But before we get any more development there, we're taken back to Saskatchewan, Canada, to Ranger Outpost 9. This time, the lady who's working the radio is actually able to get a small signal out. And she was asking for an airlift. And unfortunately, by then, the guy on the couch has died. Almost immediately, she's like, I got the signal out. I got a signal out. And the guy's like, it's too late, Alice. Gates is dead. And another guy, one of the other guys who's like watching through these planks in the window, is like, get ready, it's... But before he can even finish his sentence, we see a hand punch through these boards. And all we see on this hand is three adamantium claws sticking out of a fist. So at this point, you know, we're assuming, okay, well, Wolverine's in Canada attacking these Rangers for some reason. But she got a signal out, so what's going to happen? We're then taken back to Team Double D, and they're in their little ship thing where they're like, crap, you know, we have to cross off another lead. All of these leads are dead ends. Like, I don't think that security guard guy was telling the truth, but there's not really much we can do other than like beat him up to tell us the truth. But that's not what we do. We're heroes. We're not mob enforcers here. So we're just going to have to try to find some more leads. But now they're like, we don't know how to sort through these leads to figure out which ones are real. And that's when Doug interrupts him. And he's like, hey, I just got this lead literally seconds ago. A woman, a ranger in Canada, has reported that they're under attack by a clawed thing in Canada at this ranger outpost. And Doug plays the message. It says, this is Station 9. We attack from a single man. He has claws tearing us apart. Nothing we do hurts him. And like, there's, you know, static and stuff like that in between all these words, but I'm not going to make the static sounds. And they're like, well, hey, a guy with claws, and they're under attack. It's Canada, like a guy with claws in Canada. I mean, it's either going to be Wolverine or Sabretooth. So this might be our first real lead, you know, rather than following up on all these cold leads. This is our first real hot lead that sounds legit. So let's head there. So they get in there. Like, I have to admit, like, this is a pretty cool looking flying ship. So as much as I've, you know, my hatred for the Inhumans that I've confessed on this podcast, I do have to say that this is a pretty cool little ship. Anyway, Frank, Misty, Daredevil, Doug, they all climb aboard. Well, they're already aboard, but they all get to their stations and they fly out to Ranger Outpost 9 in Saskatchewan. They land the ship, they go into the building, and Daredevil says, like, I'm getting that feeling, I'm getting that scent, the scent when something's dead. And they enter this cabin, and they just find just this grisly sight. Everyone that was there that was alive is no longer that way, and it's pretty traumatizing what they find in here. I mean, it's not pretty. And so while Misty and Frank and Daredevil are in this cabin trying to figure out where to start looking for clues, they hear like this, you know, blood-curdling scream, and they realize, like, oh crap, like, did someone get Doug? Like, we left him in the ship, so that sucks. So they go back outside and they're like, Doug! And he's like, hey, what? I'm kind of just standing here. Did you guys hear that scream? They run towards the sound of the scream. It's the final ranger lady, who is the one that was able to get the report out. But by the time they get to her, she too is no longer among the living. Daredevil then uses his powers to like pick up the trail. They're like, all right, well, this literally just happened. We just heard her scream. So whoever did it cannot have gotten far. So Daredevil starts to follow the trail, and Misty and Frank are right behind Daredevil, and it leads them to a cliff. And Daredevil is the first one to kind of realize, like, oh, it was a trick. We were led here on purpose away from where the person actually is. Like, it was whoever did this made it look like this is where the trail came so that we would follow it, but this isn't the actual trail. I do have to say that the narration in this issue, Daredevil is kind of talking about this mystery clawed man as if it were an animal. And I like the way that he's talking about it here, you know. This was a hunter. Low and cunning in ways I was not. It would set a trail easy to follow, putting us right where it wanted us to be. It would find ways to separate us, to destroy us one at a time, but it would not go after its strongest opponents first. No. It would begin with the weakest prey. And the scene then takes us back to the cabin, to the ship, to Doug, where they told Doug to get on the ship, but instead, Doug, being the internet junkie that he is, tries to go into the cabin and find the phone or find a laptop or find some sort of tech that he can use to feed his internet habit. And he's there, he finds a phone, so he gets distracted and someone creeps in behind him and he says, "I know you, Cypher." We just hear this sound effect of like a shk. Doug just like grabs his throat and he's bleeding. And the voice says, "I know your gimmick too. Languages. You speak all the languages." And so the issue ends with like Doug's lying on the floor, clutching at his chest. His neck. He's bleeding. And behind him is a man in like a trench coat with a hood pulled over his face. And he's got his claws. So, I mean, we're thinking at this point, like, hey, it's Wolverine. Wolverine is here. And for whatever reason, he just attacked Doug, of all people. Of course, the next issue picks up right where this one left off. Daredevil, Misty, and Frank are able to backtrack back to the Ranger outpost where they find Doug bleeding and wounded. They do realize, though, that he is still alive. He wasn't killed. He was just very badly wounded, and luckily for Doug, the inhuman ship of Frank's actually has the technology to keep him alive and to help him heal faster. So Frank takes Doug back into the ship. Misty and Daredevil go off into the woods to try to find this mystery person, but they realize that this person is actually now waiting on the ship. So first off, the person waited, right, until the whole team was in the cabin, and then it dispatched of the final Ranger in order to lure them out. He then led the three stronger ones on this chase, injured the weakest one, and then went back and hid on the ship so that they would be distracted when they finally all came together, which would give him the advantage. So that's what he's doing. He's waiting up there on the ship, but luckily Daredevil's senses are able to tell them, like, hey, wait, hold on. He's up on the roof of the ship, so don't go in there yet. He alerts Misty. Misty and Daredevil then try to engage this mystery person in combat enough so that Frank could get Doug back onto the ship. Eventually, Daredevil gets up onto the roof, and the mystery man pops his claws, snicked. He wants to fight, and we finally see who this mystery man is, and it's not Logan. It's Albert, Wolverine's cybernetic clone android, you know, murderous robot guy. You might remember him as one of the random X-Men figures from the 1990s X-Men line of action figures who came out before beloved female characters like Rogue and Jean Grey. Man, the X-Men toy line was awesome. But yeah, it really was lacking in like all the female heroes until it was too late. Like, it wasn't until like 96, 97 that all the female characters started coming out. And by then you already had like a Quark action figure and an Albert action figure and like three different Ahabs for some reason, probably because they were always like buy three for a dollar at KB Toys. Yeah, I had like a Kylan action figure. I had the weirdest action figures. And I never got a Rogue or a Jean until way, way late. I had like 3 storms, and I know I had a Psylocke that even had like the light up. I'm getting way off on a tangent. Hold on, let me get back to the issue here. Okay, so it's not Wolverine, it's Albert. I don't even remember the last time Albert was seen in the comics. The last time I can think, and I'm pretty sure there was at least a couple appearances in between, but like really the last time I could think he even showed up was that first arc that he appeared in Wolverine with LCD, and he like is able to, I don't know, outsmart the Reaver's programming, and he's kind of given his life back. And so him and LCD, and I'm not saying like LCD, like the letters LCD. Her name is Elsie D. And she was also like a little robot, android, cyborg thing that was like a little girl. And so I guess it makes sense with, you know, Wolverine always taking, you know, young girls under his wing to kind of train him. So, of course, Albert the cyborg would also have a companion that was a little girl. But, I mean, that's the last time I can even remember them being there. So to have Albert out here in the wilderness of Canada by himself, I don't know. I like it. I mean, I really like it because I was not expecting it to be Albert. I, at that point, really was figuring, all right, cool. Well, since Charles Soule's the one who killed Wolverine and then who wrote the Hunt for Wolverine one-shot in this series and he's writing The Return, maybe because this is his miniseries, that this is the one where Logan actually is. But no, it wasn't. It was Albert. That being said, you know, it's still a pretty sweet battle. It's not quite Wolverine versus Daredevil and Elektra in Enemy of the State, but it's still pretty good. Ultimately, Daredevil kind of gets Albert into a disadvantage, and then Albert is able to escape into the wilderness. Misty and Daredevil then give chase, and of course, by that point, Frank has successfully gotten Doug onto the ship, and Doug is now undergoing the healing process. You know, he popped him in an inhuman Bacta tank. Not really, but he did kind of strap this weird, like, healing tech thing around his neck that should help him heal his injuries. So that's cool. And so Frank is able then to join the fight, and the three of them pursue Albert into the wilderness. And like I said, it's an Albert who is now at a disadvantage. I didn't quite tell what happened, but it seems like Daredevil was able to get one of his clubs into some circuitry on Albert's android parts or his cyborg parts, and that kind of weakened him enough that he felt he needed to retreat. So these three are now in pursuit, and they're able to catch up with him fairly quickly, and he's asking, like, what did you do with LCD? Where is she? So you kind of get the feeling that this guy, even though he's a cyborg, he still has a mind, and he's not in his right mind. At that point, they're then able to hit him with some, like, you know, blast pistols or whatever of some sort of energy, and that's enough to kind of knock him to the ground. He's not quite out, but by that point, Doug has actually recovered enough that he's, you know, mobile again, and he actually comes out with an inhuman weapon and, like, just blasts the living crap out of him. Just, like, this one blast that just, like, opens up all the circuitry in his back. This is the best part. They just leave him there. They're like, we filed an anonymous report with the Canadian authorities, and then we just hightailed it back to the U.S. So I guess they just did like what Kitty and the X-Men did back in The Hunt for Wolverine, where they're like, eh, we'll just call an Alpha Flight. We'll let them handle the Reavers. This is Canada, after all. We'll let them handle it. So that's nice. I'm sure that the people of Canada appreciate all of us Americans going into Canada, making a mess, and being like, hey, you guys will clean it up, right? The foursome, now thinking their mission is over and that they didn't really find what they were looking for, are heading back to the U.S. Daredevil's off doing something, meditating, I guess, or maybe filing his mission report, or at least writing his mission report down. Doug is getting his fix of internet on that dude's phone that he had taken. Misty and Frank, being the grizzled police veterans that they are, decide that, well, the mission's over, time to hit the sauce. So they go to, I guess, what would be the galley on this ship, and they share a drink. Turns out there is a little bit of a mutual attraction, that perhaps their mutual admiration has grown to something beyond just admiration and possible affection. So that's kind of nice. You know, these two lonesome veterans kind of bonding over something, sharing a moment together. seeing that something more is developing. Unfortunately for them, before anything more can really happen other than some hot and heavy smooching, Doug comes in and just like, he's still recovering, but he can't quite talk yet. So he just kind of walks up and taps Frank on the shoulder. And Frank's like, really, dude? Like, right now you're going to be doing this? You got to, you know, pick better moments. And Cypher just kind of shows him the screen of the phone. And they stop what they're doing. And Misty's just like, oh, well, that's fascinating. Frank gets Daredevil on the horn and is like, hey, DD, Cypher found something. We're heading back to Chicago. So that Solterra bodyguard from the last issue that they could kind of tell was hiding something, but they didn't really have the time or the means to figure out what. Well, now they realized that they really need to follow up with him because maybe now he's more likely to talk. Basically, what it was is that when Misty was originally questioning the security guard, he was talking about his social media, like, oh yeah, I've been really, you know, developing my influencer persona on various social media sites. That's why I posted that Wolverine thing, because I thought it would get all the likes and it would go viral and what have you. And like the day that Misty went and talked to him and he admitted like, oh, it wasn't really Wolverine, I took it down. That same day, he stopped posting on social media altogether, just 100% cold turkey. And that raised enough eyebrows that they thought, we should probably go back and check, because we know that that guy wasn't necessarily telling the truth, but we do know that he was very much on the internet, very much on social media, and suddenly he's not. Pretty much since the minute we left his house, he's been off the radar. So they go back to his place and Daredevil does like a quick little x-ray vision type thing. I mean, obviously it's not vision, but he uses his extra senses to kind of see the outline of a body laying on the floor inside this guy's apartment. So they kick the door in, they go to see what's going on, if the guy needs help, and they find out there's actually a bomb under this dude. And seemingly before they're able to escape, this guy's apartment explodes. And we're left with the promise of to be concluded. The fourth issue begins with a quick recap that Daredevil, Frank, and Misty entered the apartment and the apartment went kaboom. So then we're taken to the actual aftermath of the explosion, or really just the actual explosion itself, as these three people are launched out of this building. Misty is able to use her bionic arm to put up like something of a force field that protects the three of them from the blast itself. And as they're falling down, Daredevil is able to grab hold of Frank and, or no, Daredevil is able to grab hold of Misty, and then Misty is able to grab Frank because her, again, her bionic arm, in addition to creating a force field, is able to stretch. So I guess her bionic arm just makes her like Super Skrull. She can stretch and she can do force fields and it makes her super strong. It probably catches fire too, but they don't tell us that in this issue, but it's kind of funny. Anyway, so they're able to grab onto each other, and then Daredevil with his free arm is able to use his billy club to, I guess, grapple to the top of the building, and it prevents them from falling to their certain doom. They are able to get situated a couple rooftops away and just kind of spy the aftermath as first responders have now arrived on scene. They realize, well, you know, as much as we'd like to continue on and track down this lead, we should probably help out. So Daredevil saves like a baby from the wreckage, Frank, Misty, they all are able to, you know, help the fire department rescue all the other victims from this building explosion. And then they head out. They head out to try to track down information regarding whoever it was that planted this bomb on this security guard. Luckily, as we learned way back in the first issue, Frank's inhuman superpower is that he can take snapshots and save them for later. So luckily, because, you know, he's a police officer, he's an investigator by trade, the moment he entered the apartment, he snapped all kinds of pictures within his own memory. So as they're on their inhuman ship again, regrouping from this explosion and trying to figure out, okay, where will our next lead take us? He's able to go through these, you know, for lack of a better term, these crime scene photos. And he notices the logo on the man's jacket, and they're able to track that logo to a company called Soterra. I think I've been calling it Solterra, but it's Soterra. S-O-T-E-I-R-A. I don't think I've ever spelled it out or anything, but it's Soterra. And so they're able to find that Soterra does have an office in Chicago, and they go to track this lead down. They go directly to this office space in Chicago. And as Daredevil's like looking through the window, trying to get some reconnaissance using his extra senses, his radar sense to figure out, you know, who's in the building, how many people, their locations and all that, he's like, there's like one guy in here. And so Frank and Cypher get on Frank's flying motorcycle and they just crash through the window into this office building. It's a pretty cool visual. So they get in there and there's like the one guy. Frank just kind of points his gun at him and says, step aside, we got to do some stuff. And the guy's like, well, okay, fair enough. So Cypher gets onto the computer and he starts downloading what information is left. I mean, I got to give credit to the guy that's working in this office building. As soon as he heard that window smash, he was just deleting everything super quick, just like that. You know, they happened to stop him, you know, before they were able to delete everything. But you know, I'm not a computer guy. I'm not a network guy. I don't know how that stuff works, but I know that it should take longer than like 12 seconds to delete everything. So the fact that this guy was able to do that quickly just kind of shows that this Soterra, whatever it is, they don't want their secrets to be found. Anyway, before they're even able to leave the building or before Daredevil himself is even able to really tip them off, they've got like a kill team on site. It's like four Black Ops guys. They've got assault weapons and they're dressed as like this tactical unit. And they don't even like wait to explain or say anything like, you're under arrest or you've got some splaining to do. They just walk up and open fire on Frank and Doug. Luckily, you know, Frank and Doug, this isn't their first rodeo, and as soon as they see these guys coming up, they get out of the way. And unfortunately for the other Soterra employee that's there, and I guess it looks like maybe there was two of them, because there's like two guys caught in the crossfire here, before Daredevil and Misty are able to then make their entrance and come to the aid of Frank and Doug. But again, Misty's bionic force field comes in handy. She's able to then provide cover for Doug as he gets the last of the information off the computers, which leaves Frank and Daredevil to take out this kill team, which they don't really take them out, but they're at least able to keep them at bay. And the four of them are then able to make their escape together once Cypher gets the information that he needs. And, you know, they're back on the ship. They're asking Cypher like, hey, you know, what did you get? And Cypher just kind of has like this little thumb drive and he plugs it into the system. And he says he focused on searching the archives for one name, Wolverine. And then it says he found quite a bit. So they find like this recording from the Soterra company that's like an interview with a man who looks very much like Logan. And they're saying stuff like, what is your name? And he's responding, Logan, Wolverine. And they ask him other things like, you know, what will you do for us? And this Logan or Wolverine, as he is identifying himself, says, whatever you want. And like in between those panels, there's all these other panels of just this terrible violence that has been perpetrated by what appears to be Wolverine. It seems like it's almost like terrorist activities, but it's so specific and so targeted that you're kind of left wondering what exactly is going on. Who is Soterra? Why is Logan / Wolverine doing these things for them? And unfortunately, there's no explanation. They just have this information with no idea really what to do. And at that point, Daredevil says, okay, well, we did what we had to do. We found Logan. Soterra has him, at least according to this video. I'm going to get it into the hands of Kitty Pryde. And, you know, that's it. I'm ending the mission. Like this is what the X-Men need and it's beyond us. So I'm calling it here. And at that point, you know, Misty and Frank kind of decide they're going to go their separate ways, that yes, there is an attraction there, but both of them kind of agree that neither of them are really in the place right now to be in a relationship or even to begin a relationship. So they both kind of decide to split, you know, amicably, but there's definitely some unresolved feelings there. So I'm always curious if, like, these plot threads and these various miniseries that are specifically for one character, I'm always curious if those ever end up coming to fruition in other books. So if anyone's out there reading Daredevil currently or reading anything with Misty Knight or Frank McGee, I wonder, you know, let me know if anything ever happened between those two. So that kind of takes care of Daredevil. That kind of takes care of the Frank and the Misty story. The last kind of thread that gets followed up on is Doug Ramsey. He finally takes that thing off from around his neck, the Inhuman Bacta collar, and he tells Daredevil, like, hey, he walks up and he hands him the phone that he had stole from the Ranger, and he just says, I need help. And so Daredevil takes the phone from him and he calls up Kitty. And he says, you know, I've got some information for you. I'll go ahead and give it to you. Also, I have Doug, you know, and he seems like he's in need of some help. And one last thing, I don't know exactly what I found. I think it's Wolverine, but all I know is that Wolverine should have stayed dead. And it's taken to our final page. And again, we have this Wolverine looking character. We can only assume at this point that it is, in fact, Wolverine. And he doesn't have his mask on, but he's wearing just a suit that's all black, very reminiscent of the early Claremont Buscema days of Logan's Adventures in Madripoor in Volume 2. And he's just standing there in this all black suit. You only really see him from, like, the chest up. And he's got his hands kind of crossed in front of his face with his claws popped. And there's no sound effect, but you could tell he's, you know, making his animal growl. And it just says, the search concludes in Hunt for Wolverine Dead Ends, coming soon. Of course, before we get to Dead Ends, we do have one more four-issue miniseries to cover, and we'll do that next week. But I do want to kind of wrap it up. So you can see, if you've been listening to the show for a long time and you've heard me kind of talk about what my interests are outside of Wolverine, then, and as I explained earlier in this episode, I'm a big fan of noir-style stories, especially noir comics, because they always kind of push what the medium or what the theme is. Like, noir is a style, noir is a theme, and there are tropes in noir stories and things like that, and comics have a way to really kind of push those. You know, part of old of film noir was various camera angles and things like that, and you can really key up those types of angles when drawing comics. So noir is a style that really comes across very well in Wolverine. And so I think that's why I like this particular story. One, I think noir works really great in comics. It works really well with Wolverine. Charles Soule really had his thumb on it. I could just sit here and do an entire episode where I just read the narration. All the Daredevil narration, the first person narration and all that, the summation that he does, it's perfect. It's so film noir, and it's scary how excellent of a job Charles Soule does with Daredevil in this setting. It's fantastic. And you know what, Bubs? I didn't even talk about the creative teams. Or did I? I can't even remember now. But in case I didn't, I could go back and listen and double check and then edit this all out to make me sound professional. But let's be honest, it's the authenticity that keeps you guys coming back. So in case I forgot to go over the creative teams of these books, we have Charles Soule as the writer. We have Matteo Bufagni on pencils. And yes, the artwork is not as pretty as R.B. Silva's superhero artwork. But it's so good. And I was kind of mentioning the various camera angles that are known to have made film noir what it is. And he puts those angles into the panels in these issues. It's fantastic. And I like the art. It's dark and gritty. It's stylized, but it's also still very clean and very crisp. It's very good looking artwork. I would read... Man, I'd read anything that this guy draws just to see what else he can do, because I really enjoyed this artwork. I think especially teamed with the Charles Soule noir style story that we have here and the pacing that we get because of that style of story, it works so well. It's always big panels. I love it. I think maybe there's a couple of pages with like four or five panels, but for the most part, across four issues, it's mostly three or four panel pages, which I really like because the artists get a lot more breathing room to really put some life into these characters, and it shows in these issues. So artwork from Matteo Bufani. We have colors from, and I say the Italian name fine, I'm going to butcher this Greek name, if that even is Greek, but Jim Charalampidis. I'm sure I'd really screw that one up, but he does the colors in here. It's a very, very somber palette, which makes sense. You know, it's a noir story. It takes place at night. Like two of the characters are blind, you know, like, so it works really well. The color palette matches the artwork. It matches the tone of the story. It's done very well. And lastly, we have letters from VC's Joe Sabino. He's done the letters so far in all the miniseries that we've discussed. Now, this, I think, is the only of the four-issue miniseries where the core creative team, the core four, are the same across all four issues. There's no, like, additional inks or additional pencil. None of that stuff. It's all these four guys got together and created this these four issues. It's fantastic. So that's why Weapon Lost is on my read-throughs, my rereads of these issues. That's why this is my favorite of the four miniseries. Sorry, Adamantium Agenda, you're fantastic, but Weapon Lost is clearly the best of these ones. For my listeners out there who haven't read these, they're not necessarily must reads, but I would at least recommend that you go through Weapon Lost, especially if you're Daredevil fans or Charles Soule fans. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you like Wolverine, or at least you tolerate Wolverine. So check this one out at least, and then, you know, maybe read the other three. If you're going to read more than one, obviously Adamantium Agenda is the other one to choose. But definitely check out Weapon Lost if you have the chance. I'm not sure. I know that it's in print, and I know that you can read it on Marvel Unlimited, but I'm not sure where else you could find it. I know you can always buy them digitally. But I don't know if you can find them easily at the local shops or whatever. I don't remember there being a whole lot of demand for these books, so I can't imagine that they're super obscure or hard to find. So, Bubs, that does it for this week. Check us out next week. We will be covering the final four-issue miniseries, Claws of a Killer. It was a very quick read, which I appreciate. And although it's not my favorite, it's probably my least favorite, I do have a little bit more appreciation for it this second reread through. Just because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's just a fun story. There's a little bit of zombies, so a little spoiler alert for you there, but it's fun. It's fun enough. And then, of course, because I probably have the least to say about Claws of a Killer, I will also be covering the Hunt for Wolverine Dead Ends one shot that wraps up this event and then leads us into the Return of Wolverine miniseries, which was a 5-issue miniseries. So that's what's to come next week and the week after. So, Bubs, if you like the show and you want to keep the conversation going, I am no longer on Twitter at TalkinSnicked, but you can find me on Instagram at TalkinSnicked. Turns out my Instagram account for the show that I started way back when but then never used, I never deleted it, and I realized recently that it was still active. So if you are on Instagram, then definitely check me out there. Give me a follow. I'm not super active on there, but I'm definitely available to chat, do some messaging and whatnot. So check me out on Instagram. You can always reach me via email, TalkSnicked@gmail.com. That's TalkSnicked at gmail.com. Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you have the ability to rate and review it, please take a couple minutes out of your day to give me a 5-star rating if you like the show, or a 1-star rating if you don't, or anything in between, whatever you feel is fair. And if you have even more time, please leave me a review, as I try to get the show back on track. Obviously, the higher the ratings, the more the reviews we have, then the more eyes will see the podcast and the more ears get to listen. If you want more of me outside of Talkin' Snicked, make sure you go check out my buddy Brett Scott's podcast, Marvel Plus. It's a fantastic podcast. It's a weekly breakdown, review, and discussion show for the Disney Plus MCU-related series. He did a whole series on WandaVision, and he's currently doing episodes for Falcon and Winter Soldier. The time that this podcast comes out is, what, Wednesday, April 7th? So then Friday, April 9th of 2021, as you're listening to this, episode 4 of Falcon and Winter Soldier will drop, and then I will be appearing as a guest host on Marvel Plus. So make sure you subscribe to his feed and check us out next Monday. One more thing, Bubs, make sure you check out Retcon X. He's got a Spotify playlist, and I believe he's on YouTube as well. He hasn't been super busy lately, but he does have a lot of really great original music that he has created inspired by the X-Men. So go check him out, Retcon X. And if you need more of a reason, just check out this track that's coming up, Back from the Dead, inspired by this self-same event that we're talking about, Return of Wolverine. Until next time, Bubs.